This is Dave Carrington, welcoming you to another edition of Squaring the Circle here on Celtica Radio, online, on mobile, and on digital wireless channel 915. This time, I have a very different story for you. It's a factual account of the life of Pilot Officer Laurie Whitbread, a fighter pilot who took part in the Battle of Britain. This brief biography is called A Local Hero, both compiled and read for us by Ron Powell, himself a former RAF pilot. Regular listeners will recall that Ron has contributed a number of stories to Squaring the Circle over the past few years. He is the author of two very successful aviation novels entitled Wings Over Summer and Wings Over Malta, and also two volumes of his memoir, Shropshire Blue, the first about his early years in the RAF, the second about his flying training. His books are all available as e-books or paperbacks on Amazon, and you can read more about them and Laurie Whitbread on his website, ronpowell.co.uk. And the music in this month's programme was composed and provided for us by Adam and Tony Villaris. In a moment, though, Christopher Ross will open the show with his latest Dispatches from New York after these messages.
The fastest way to the internet.
islandwebservices.co.uk.
Island Web Services design and host bespoke websites for businesses and individuals. Professional websites start from just £100 with no hidden extras. Log on to find out more at islandwebservices.co.uk.
Required listening with Amazon Music.
Dad music again?
The greatest guitarist of all time.
Wait, who?
Alexa, add this song to a new playlist.
Sure, what's the new playlist name?
Jack's Intro to Classic Rock.
Adding Stepping Stone by Jimi Hendrix to Jack's Intro to Classic Rock playlist.
Amazon Music, the simplest way to listen to the music you and soon he will love. New customers start your 30-day free trial at amazonmusic.com. Renews automatically, cancel anytime.
This summer, Celtica Radio turns day into the darkest winter night and brings a chill to your bones with an adaptation of Bram Stoker's Dracula, the like of which has never been made before.
Van Helsing, meet our chief of security, the man with the fastest pair of fists in the world, Bruce Lee.
Bruce Lee? But he's dead. Pleased to meet you, Van Helsing. I just finished training, of course, kicking Steve McQueen's ass.
Tune in. If you dare, you'll die laughing.
By the way, there's a job going in the remake of The Exorcist. I think you'd be perfect for the lead role.
Greetings, Celtica Radio listeners. Christopher Ross with episode 27 of Dispatches from New York. Today's poem is by the founder of the Romantic movement, Mr. William Wordsworth, who lived from 1770 to 1850, and his poems are steeped in a love of and deep connection to nature. When I used to be a teacher, one of my favorite words to discuss with students was vicissitudes. Comes from the Latin verb vicare, which means to carry. Our discussions would center around how life is filled with ups and downs, but it is not the ups and downs that define your character, but how you choose to carry them. My friend and teammate Henry Chalfont Gallagher embodies this sense of brightness, and therefore this episode is dedicated to him. Character of the Happy Warrior by William Wordsworth. Who is the happy warrior? Who is he that every man in arms should wish to be? It is the generous spirit who, when brought among the tasks of real life, hath wrought upon the plan that pleased his boyish thought, whose high endeavors are an inward light that makes the path before him always bright, who, with a natural instinct to discern what knowledge can perform, is diligent to learn, abides by this resolve and stops not there, but makes his moral being his prime care, who, doomed to go in company with pain and fear and bloodshed miserable train, turns his necessity to glorious gain. In face of these doth exercise a power which is our human nature's highest dower, controls them and subdues, transmutes, bereaves of their bad influence, and their good receives by objects which might force the soul to abate her feeling, rendered more compassionate, is placable, because occasions rise so often that demand such sacrifice, more skillful in self-knowledge, even more pure, as tempted more, more able to endure, as more exposed to suffering and distress, thence also more alive to tenderness. 'Tis he whose law is reason, who depends upon that law as on the best of friends, whence, in a state where men are tempted still to evil for a guard against worse ill, and what in quality or act is best does seldom on a right foundation rest. He labors good on good to fix, and owes to virtue every triumph that he knows, who, if he rise to station of command, rises by open means, and there will stand on honorable terms or else retire, and in himself possess his own desire, who comprehends his trust and to the same keeps faithful with a singleness of aim, and therefore does not stoop nor lie in wait for wealth or honors or for worldly state, whom they must follow, on whose head must fall, like showers of manna if they come at all, whose powers shed round him in the common strife, or mild concerns of ordinary life, a constant influence, a peculiar grace, but who, if he be called upon to face some awful moment to which heaven has joined great issues, good or bad for humankind, is happy as a lover, and attired with sudden brightness like a man inspired, and through the heat of conflict keeps the law in calmness made, and sees what he foresaw. Or if an unexpected call succeed, come when it will, is equal to the need. He who, though thus endued as with a sense and faculty for storm and turbulence, is yet a soul whose master bias learns to home-felt pleasures and to gentle scenes. Is yet a soul whose master bias leans to home-felt pleasures and to gentle scenes. Sweet images, which wheresoe'er he be are at his heart, and such fidelity it is his darling passion to approve. More brave for this, that he hath much to love. 'Tis finally the man who lifted high conspicuous object in a nation's eye, or left unthought of in obscurity, who, with a toward or untoward lot, prosperous or adverse to his wish or not, plays in the many games of life, that one where what he most doth value must be won, whom neither shape or danger can dismay, nor thought of tender happiness betray, who, not content that former worth stand fast, looks forward, persevering, to the last, from well to better daily self-surpassed, who, whether praise of him must walk the earth forever, and to noble deeds give birth, or he must fall, to sleep without his fame and leave a dead, unprofitable name, finds comfort in himself and in his cause, and, while the mortal mist is gathering, draws his breath in confidence of heaven's applause. This is the happy warrior. This is he that every man in arms should wish to be. So when I think of this poem, I think of the high idea of how to proceed and persevere through the many games of life unfettered by pride or ego or personal gain. Virtuous behavior, brave behavior, humble behavior, unselfish behavior, all for their own sake. How many men or women do you know who uphold these virtues? How does one react to the vicissitudes of life? With sudden brightness? With calmness, with confidence, with happiness? It all has to do with attitude, or as my feline friends would say, catitude. Lucky for me, I know a man who does embody these qualities. Once again, this episode is dedicated to Henry Chalfont Gallagher. Celtica Radio listeners all over the world, peace.
You're listening to Celtica Radio.
Hey, this is Shaq. When I was playing ball, our team doctors helped me overcome pain with something called TENS therapy. And Icy Hot Smart Relief is that same kind of therapy. You just push a button and whoosh. Smart Relief sends waves of relaxing pulses that immediately start blocking pain. Back, hip, knee, or shoulder pain. Even works for hours after you turn it off. Man, this Smart Relief's so smart, they should call it Shaq Relief. Ooh, I like that one. Somebody write that down for me. Turn on Smart Relief and turn off pain. Get my lawyer on the phone. We need to patent that.
Use only as directed.
Rain Striker. Discover the stunning debut album from Eleni Vialaris.
On the wind, ancient voices and spirits sail.
Enjoy 15 original songs sung in English and Anglo-Saxon and uncover a world of fantasy, myth, and legend. Believe in magic. Rain Striker. Available to buy now on iTunes and Amazon.
If you like Celtica Radio programs, then you'll love the Celtica Radio Mixcloud option. On the Celtica Radio Mixcloud, you can listen to special content and material, including documentaries, some of our landmark archived roadshows, and special programs featuring established artists, as well as the new music Celtica Radio is famous for. Click on the Mixcloud button on our website at CelticaRadio.com or go direct to Mixcloud.com/Celtica Radio. And while you're there, don't forget to follow us to make sure you'll get the very latest programs as they come online. You can even listen through Facebook and Twitter. Discover a whole new world of Celtica Radio exclusively on demand on your mobile, tablet or PC. The Celtica Radio Mixcloud option at Mixcloud.com/Celtica Radio.
Thanks, Chris. He'll be back next time with more dispatches from New York. For those of you who would like to hear more of Chris, you can go to his podcast called Booksmart with Douglas Day at booksmart.blueberry.net. That's booksmart.blueberry.net. It can also be found on iTunes and other streaming venues. I'll repeat that point towards the end of the show, so have a pen and paper available to note down the details. I now give you A Local Hero, compiled and read for us by Ron Powell.
I grew up in the market town of Ludlow on the England-Wales border in the early 1960s, at a time when children could be out of sight of their parents, in a way that would be almost unthinkable now. From the tender age of five, I was allowed to walk the half mile or so to play with friends. Sometimes I'd take a shortcut through a local cemetery. By the path next to the chapel was a distinctive white headstone at which I always paused. I still pause there today, more than half a century later. The tablet of Portland stone marks the final resting place of Pilot Officer Laurie Whitbread, a Royal Air Force Spitfire pilot who, during the Battle of Britain, became the first Ludlowian to lay down his life in the Second World War. Laurie was my boyhood hero and one of the principal inspirations for my 32-year career in the Royal Air Force. He also inspired my Battle of Britain novel, Wings Over Summer, which is dedicated to his memory. Since its publication, I've learnt much more about him and been struck by some of the parallels in our lives and the differences. I've also become increasingly keen for others to hear his story. Laurie Whitbread was born in Ludlow on the 21st of August 1914 and grew up in the town with his parents and sister, Vera, who I knew as Mrs. Bodnam when she was one of my junior school teachers. Like me, he went to Ludlow Grammar School, where he was a popular pupil who excelled at sport, notably boxing, rugby and hockey, at which he represented his county. On leaving school, we both became apprentices, me in the RAF, Laurie with a company in Birmingham that manufactured sheet metal for the car industry. In January 1939, though, when war with Germany seemed inevitable, he applied to the Air Ministry and left his job to take up a short service commission in the RAF as a potential pilot. 40 years later, I trod the same path, passing the equivalent of the Air Ministry tests and embarking on my own quest for the coveted RAF pilot badge. Nothing says more about the task faced by young men such as Laurie than a comparison of our flying training. When, at the start of the Falklands War, I joined No. 24 Squadron flying Charlie 130 Hercules transport aircraft out of RAF Lynham in Wiltshire, I'd received more than 300 hours of training on four different aircraft types. It had taken 3 years. Laurie, on the other hand, reached the front line in just 9 months, having flown less than 200 hours on two different types. Later in my career, I became a flying instructor and taught hundreds of young men and women to fly, but I would never have dreamt of sending even the best of them to the front line after only 200 hours. But those were different times. In November 1939, just 2 months after the declaration of war, Laurie joined No. 222 Squadron, flying twin-engine Bristol Blenheims out of RAF Duxford in Cambridgeshire. His squadron commander described him as a short, stocky, cheerful character, pleasant, well-mannered and quiet. And at a time when relations between commissioned and non-commissioned pilots could be formal and frosty, NCOs described him as pleasant and friendly, with no affectation, at ease with all ranks. In short, Laurie was what in my day we would have called a good guy, an accolade that in the understated language of the RAF is more impressive than it sounds. For his first few months, when the winter weather permitted, he flew convoy patrols over the North Sea. Such missions could be monotonous, soporific even, but not always. On the 14th of December, his diary states, "Narrowest escape to date, nearly spun in while night flying." Then, in March 1940, much to their delight, the squadron was chosen to convert to Spitfires. Again, during my time, such a conversion would take several months and include ground school, many hours in a simulator, and many more airborne with an instructor. For Laurie and his contemporaries, however, there was no simulator and no dual control Spitfire on which to practice. He flew only two short flights in an old training aircraft before being sent solo in the most advanced fighter of its day. Immediately after, he and the rest of the squadron began an intensive period of training in close formation flying, practicing the fighter attack profiles they expected to employ against the Luftwaffe. On the 15th of April, he had his first accident. It seems he tipped his Spitfire forward onto its nose. All too easy to do. But there must have been extenuating circumstances, because the squadron commander cleared him of blame. On the 10th of May, Hitler's forces began their sweep through Holland, Belgium and northern France to the Channel coast. By the end of the month, Laurie and his squadron, which now included Flight Lieutenant Douglas Bader, were flying over the Dunkirk beaches and the fleet of small ships trying to bring the remnants of the British Expeditionary Force home. By the 4th of June, when 338,000 troops had been evacuated, Treble 2 Squadron had lost 5 pilots, 4 killed and 1 missing. The next few months were quieter, spent moving between several airfields in the north of England. But then, on the 29th of August 1940, the squadron moved to RAF Hornchurch in Essex, an airfield in the front line of the Battle of Britain. In their first 48 hours, they lost 18 aircraft and several pilots, partly because their tactic of flying in tight formation restricted their ability to look out for the enemy and to manoeuvre if they were attacked. In an effort to counter this, pilots were chosen to weave at the rear of the formation, scouring the sky for enemy aircraft. Known as Tail End Charlies, theirs was a position of great responsibility and great danger. They were often the first to be hit by the German equivalent of the Spitfire, the Messerschmitt Bf 109. Lorry was one of Treble 2's Tail End Charlies. On the 31st of August, his was one of 10 Spitfires that attacked 24 109s protecting a force of Heinkel bombers. He closed to within 50 yards of one of the agile, single-engine German fighters, firing into its fuselage from tail to cockpit. It rolled onto its back, issuing white smoke, and started to nose down. But fire from other aircraft forced Lorry to pull away, so he never saw it crash, and the kill couldn't be confirmed. September opened with a pattern of numerous scrambles and interceptions. On the 7th, the Luftwaffe changed tactics, shifting its point of attack from the RAF's airfields to the City of London. Fighter Command was caught by surprise, and on that day, Treble 2 was one of the few squadrons to find and intercept the bombers. Flying over the capital, they engaged a force of 109s at 27,000 feet, but Lorry became separated. Nevertheless, he pressed on, eventually finding a force of 25 to 30 Dornier bombers. Undaunted by the odds, he dived down on a straggler and set its right engine on fire, before he was forced to pull away by machine gun fire from the rest of the formation. Once again, the fate of the bomber he'd hit could not be confirmed. On the 9th of September, he had better luck. The squadron attacked a force of 109s escorting a formation of bombers flying west at 20,000 feet. Lorry fired a 4-second burst at a Messerschmitt, shooting off part of its wing and sending it into a spin. This time, his formation leader saw the German pilot bail out, and Lorry was credited with a kill. On the 14th, he wrote to his mother in Ludlow. He said everything was fine, although he was getting over a touch of frostbite in his left hand, the result of flying in the intense cold at high altitude. On the 18th, he was meant to start a week's leave, but was called on to fly a patrol over Canterbury. His leave obviously fell by the wayside, because he stayed on at Hornchurch. 2 days later, on the morning of September the 20th, the squadron was scrambled to meet an incoming raid. As they clambered for height above the Thames estuary, a formation of 109s fell on them. Lorry's Spitfire, November 3203, was hit. It seems that he unstrapped and attempted to bail out, but he was shot in the left side and fell back into the cockpit. At 11:15, the aircraft crashed near Rochester in Kent. Lorry was thrown clear of the wreckage, but died instantly. It's unlikely that he saw his nemesis, an Oberleutnant Hans Assi Hahn. Lorry was buried in Ludlow Cemetery with full military honours. Chiselled into his Commonwealth War Graves headstone are the RAF badge and the words, Pilot Officer H.L. Whitbread, Pilot, Royal Air Force, 20th of September 1940, age 26. Beneath these details is a phrase from a speech Winston Churchill had made to the House of Commons a few weeks earlier. Never in the field of human conflict was so much owed by so many to so few. As a result of these words, the 2,917 pilots that fought in the Battle of Britain have gone down in history as the few. Lorry was one of 544 that died, and one that remained largely unheralded by the wider world, although he has a lasting legacy in Ludlow. The childhood friends I used to walk past his grave to meet lived in Whitbread Road, named in his honour. And the Tower of Ludlow's impressive medieval church is lit up every year on the anniversary of his death. As for me, I still visit Laurie's grave at least once a month. My parents are buried nearby. And at a book signing in Ludlow, his nephew told me of his family's delight at the dedication in Wings Over Summer. He also presented me with a picture of his uncle that sits on my desk as I write. To me, Pilot Officer Laurie Whitbread seems the very epitome of a local hero. And while he may be gone, I'm pleased to say that, in his hometown at least, he's far from forgotten.
And so we wrap up for this month another Squaring the Circle here on Celtica Radio. I hope that you've enjoyed listening to the poetry and analysis by Christopher Ross in his Dispatches from New York. Just a reminder for those of you who'd like to hear more of Chris, you can go to his podcast called Booksmart with Douglas Day at booksmart.blueberry.net. That's booksmart.blueberry.net. It can also be found on iTunes and other streaming venues. Thanks too go to Ron Powell for compiling and reading A Local Hero, his biographical account of the life of Pilot Officer Laurie Whitbread. I'm also grateful to Adam and Tony Villaris for kindly composing and providing the music used in this programme. Now I know I keep saying this every time, but I always need more material, so why not consider writing a short story? You don't have to be an established author or even an aspiring author to get your story on Celtica Radio's Squaring the Circle. Please send your script in a Word-compatible format to dave.carrington@celticaradio.com. If you would prefer, send me a recording of it. Don't worry too much about the final background tweaks. We can get those sorted. The important thing is that I get your scripts, and lots of them. Just a reminder, your story should be fiction, but it can be of any genre and of any length, up to about 3,500 words. It should be suitable for general broadcast, and I'd be delighted to receive two or more scripts from you. You have been listening to Celtica Radio, the world's local radio station. And whatever time it is where you are right now, this is Dave Carrington signing off and wishing you all a very good morning, good afternoon,